You want it. You need it. It's what everyone's talking about. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Now, here's Kevin.
All right, I am here. Aaron is here. Aaron is still here, and he's not going anywhere. Nope. Despite the fact that he got a great new job, and I'm thrilled for him, Aaron's going to be Tim Murray and Michael Jenkins, producer at NBC Sports Radio, starting next week.
Yep, starting next week.
But you're still going to be able to do this as
which
I'm thrilled about. But congratulations to Aaron on the new gig. Murray and Jenks have a great show on NBC Sports Radio. A lot of gambling discussion. And Tim's been a close friend for a long time, and they're doing really well. So I'm thrilled about that. This show is presented by Window Nation. If you're in the market for windows, call 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com and tell them that we told you to call. The Nats lost again last night. 5-1 at home to the Cardinals. That's three straight at home to the Cardinals. They finish up their four-game set with the Cardinals this afternoon at 4:05, a 4:05 start at the park. I think there's rain in the forecast, thunderstorms in the forecast. But it's now 6 of 7 losses, 6 of the last 7 games. The one game they won, they trailed 6-0 in, and that was to the Padres on Sunday, and they had to rally and win that one in 11 innings. For Scherzer, it is now the fifth time in his 6 starts that they have lost. Primarily run production, but not all of it just because of run production. He wasn't great last night, and they were banged up, and as they have been banged up. And I was actually listening to somebody tweeted out some of the conversation that Mike Rizzo had with the Junkies yesterday on JFK, and you know, he came off as a little bit defensive, in my view. Did you hear it?
I did not hear it, but, you know, generally when he talks and talks to the media, when it comes to things like that, he does get a little bit defensive. That doesn't surprise me.
I like Rizzo a lot.
Yes.
Always loved, before he, you know, became a regular fixture and a paid fixture on JFK, used to always love having him on the shows that I was a part of, with Tommy in particular, at 980. I like Rizzo a lot. He's a tough SOB, feisty, competitive, and I think he's really smart. But the bottom line is they are injured. I mean, no Rendon, no Turner. Last night, no Soto. No Zimmerman, right, last night?
Yeah, Zimmerman's on the IL.
Yeah, so they are struggling to generate offense. Certainly enough offense to you know, stem this run of losses in their last 7 games. They've lost 6 times. You know, they produced in several of them not enough runs. 3 runs, 3 runs, 3 runs, 2 runs, and last night just 1 run. They haven't had a game that they've lost except for the Sunday game. They won that game 7-6, but they lost the game 9-5, the loss in Colorado that started this, you know, 6 losses in 7 game stretch. That was about the only game where they produced enough offense. But their starting pitching hasn't been great either. Patrick Corbin was great until his last start,
right,
where he wasn't so good. Strasburg's actually been pretty good as of late, and he gets the start today, this afternoon. But, you know, the Nats are 12-17.
Yeah.
This is as badly as you could have thought, as bad as you could have thought that they could have started the season, a season that many thought would end in division title and a run at a World Series.
Look, I mean, this game, you know, it's hard to say one game is must win, especially in May. It's a huge game.
You think it's a must win today?
I think if they lose this game, go out on that road trip, as I said, you know, we talked about this a few days ago. It's this 10-game road trip where I think they need to come home from that, you know, less than 5 games under 500. Like, so if they lose today, they are 6 games under 500. That puts a lot of pressure on that team to do very well on a very tough road trip. And if they don't, I don't know that Dave Martinez comes back as the manager.
When you say comes back, next year? Or do you think
No.
Comes back from the road trip
as the manager.
Well, who's the replacement?
So we talked about this a few days ago, and I didn't have a great answer for you. And then I did a little digging. There are 2 possibilities I found. One I really like, and I think they might go this direction. Randy Knorr is the manager in AAA right now. Randy Knorr, if you remember, almost got the job several times. He was the bench coach for a long time. Almost got it after Davey Johnson was fired and was considered at least briefly after Matt Williams was fired as well. They didn't decide not to go in that direction, despite there being a lot of support for him. So if you're looking for kind of a feel-good, something that the fans could get behind, Randy Knorr's that answer. I also know they like Matt LaCroix, who's the AA manager, a whole lot. They've liked him a long time. He was the bullpen coach up here for a while. They think he is a future manager. So I think that those would be the two directions to go with. I would, if I had to guess now, Randy Knorr would be the big, I'd be looking at him right now.
Is this a big, bold prediction from you?
Let's
take it one step at a time. Can you realistically think that they're going to have a really good road trip at Philly, at Milwaukee, and at Los Angeles?
No.
Especially with what they have injury-wise, which, by the way, if you listened to any part of the Rizzo interview with the Junkies yesterday, you know, he talked a lot about the injuries. And to me, that is for Dave Martinez, that is going to be something that they will point to and say, look, what's he supposed to do? We've got, arguably two of our best, three or four players out. And last night didn't produce any offense, one total run without Soto in the lineup. That hurts. I think you got to wait until they're back healthy, especially if you're still, if nobody's pulling away in this race.
Well, but in my situation, you're talking about, let's say they go 4-6.
What are they going to come back? 5 out, 6 out? Not much more.
I mean, if they they get swept by Philly or they lose 2 out of 3 to Philly, all of a sudden you're talking 7-8 out. I mean, already they're 4.5 out. If they lose today and then they go, let's say they go 4-6 on a road trip, including losing 2 of 3 to Philly, they're probably 7 or 8 out.
Yeah. Well, long season.
It's a long season.
They're going to go ahead and play the other 140-something anyway.
Oh, they're absolutely going to. But I don't know. I think there's a lot of starting to be built up anger towards Dave Martinez. Because even before the injuries, it's not like they were going through people and then all of a sudden they hit injuries and started skidding.
Right.
They've been skidding from moment one here. Yeah, so if you want to have me make a bold prediction, by Memorial Day, Dave Martinez is out.
There you go. You heard it here first from Aaron Oster, the producer, editor, social media manager for the Kevin Sheehan Show podcast, and soon to be the producer for NBC Sports Radio show with Tim Murray and Michael Jenkins. All right. Lot to get to today. Van Pelt will be a guest a little bit later on, but a lot of things to get to. First of all, from Bryce on Twitter, Gruden and Tirico, they were a two-man booth, right? Yeah, they were. We missed that one yesterday, obviously, because the Monday night booth now is going to be Booger McFarlane and Joe Tessitore, two-man booth with Lisa Salters on the sideline, and we were trying to come up with recent two-man booths, and we just completely forgot about Gruden and Tirico, which I felt was a very good booth. Next thing I wanted to get to was the Redskins are not picking up the option, fifth-year option on Josh Doctson. That is not a surprise. It does not mean that Josh Doctson won't be a significant part of what they do this year. And Josh Doctson, now knowing that he doesn't have a contract for 2020, is going to be playing for one. The question about Josh has never been talent. It's always been, does he have enough interest and fire in the belly? I mean, that's really it, netting it out. And, that's one of those things. I was dead wrong about Josh Doctson. I loved him at TCU. He was a phenomenal performer. He had every single thing you'd look for in a college receiver, translating to the NFL. But the things that we never know about, right? And all the due diligence, the personal stuff, the psychological stuff, the does he love football stuff. And I think it's been clear over his first three seasons that it's been a struggle to clearly say that this is something that is, the end all be all for him. There's just been something missing from it. Early on, it was a claim from some that it was homesickness. And, I know that at TCU he was very introverted and very shy and had gone away from school out of high school for 1 year and then transferred back to Texas to be close to home. But, you know, he's a professional earning a lot of money at the professional level. If he wants this to be a career and a long-term career where he makes, you know, a lot more money than he's made off of a rookie deal, he's going to have to prove something this year. It doesn't mean that somebody, if he has another, you know, subpar year, that somebody won't roll the dice that they can figure him out next year. But it's not going to equate to a big contract. I still think, you know, despite what the Redskins drafted in the optimism over McLaurin and Harmon, you know, that Doxson is still going to get a really good shot, you know, along with Richardson and Trey Quinn and et cetera. But he's got to come with a lot more, probably early on, to turn this into what could be, you know, who knows, maybe the breakout year. It'd be perfect timing for him, especially now that the Redskins haven't picked up that fifth-year option. But not a surprise. Couple of tweets that will lead me into a conversation. From Alan on Twitter. Alan tweeted me yesterday, "So conflict and dysfunction as a Redskins narrative sells on podcasts, radio, and ESPN, when accurate or not. Snyder choosing a move to invigorate franchise business prospects while also giving all coaching elements a slice of the pie they wanted seems smart." So a couple of things. First of all, nobody is suggesting that Snyder's definitely wrong. I'm not a Haskins guy. There are other people that aren't Haskins guys. Doesn't mean he's going to be wrong. But it's not conflict and dysfunction that sells, just so you know. In fact, that's probably not great for us. It's not terrible for us, for people that do what I do, podcasts, radio shows, etc. It's not a terrible thing. I'd be disingenuous to suggest that it's a terrible thing. But it's not great. Them winning would be the best. But since they don't win, drama is definitely better than no drama. And that drama can be drama that's good drama, like, you know, the drafting of RG3, which was a real, for most of us, was a real positive and exciting thing, but a dramatic thing with the big trade to move up. I was in favor of that trade. I was wrong. You know, I was wrong about Josh Doxson. I was wrong about RG3. I don't know that I would have been wrong had the owner not gotten in the middle of the relationship between the head coach and the quarterback, but that's beside the point. That was exciting drama. That's really good for us. And it could be drama over something perceived by more than less to be something bad. Drama that's polarizing is really good. Something they do that's polarizing is definitely good for us. I'm not going to debate that. But winning would be the best. 2012 and to a lesser extent 2015 and 2016 were really good years for all of us that do this kind of thing. Winning is best. Winning big, well, that would be the ultimate. We just don't have any experience with that as far as the Redskins are concerned. This from Joe on Twitter. "You guys have really done a number on Bruce Allen over the last few months. Give the guy some credit when he deserves it. Have you seen or reported on the Extend Bruce hashtag? Is that a true thing, Aaron?"
Now I'm looking. I haven't seen it at all. Let's see. Extend Bruce.
If that's a true thing, my fault. Okay. I did not know that.
I have seen, since the new year, I see all of 7 tweets with the Extend Bruce hashtag.
But there is an Extend Bruce hashtag.
Well, I mean, you can 7. Throw it on. Yeah, 7 tweets total.
There's
in
7
4 months.
Total. Well, maybe it's going to grow to maybe 70.
I do see the first one is, "Damn, look at my president." Hashtag Extend Bruce.
So I'm not going to share this with you here in the podcast, but maybe it's this guy Joe that started it, that tweeted me. Anyway, to Joe's tweet, "You guys have really done a number on Bruce Allen over the last few months. Give the guy some credit when he deserves it." First of all, you can credit people for drafts in the moment, but again, I've gone over this so many times, you really don't know, nor do they. But I did think about that tweet in with respect to, you know, the people, and there are many of you out there that actually believe that the media has been the problem, which is utterly ridiculous. Nobody has impacted the Redskins in a negative way more than a majority of its longtime fans, who in recent years have stopped going to games, and even more telling, have stopped watching games. And by the way, the reasons are totally justifiable. I'm not criticizing it. But the fans, the majority of longtime fans, have done much more damage to the franchise in recent years than anybody else. The reasons are justifiable, though. One playoff win in 20 years. One in 20 years. In the last 10 years, or 19 years, in the last 10 years, just two moments in the last 10 years of legitimate optimism and hope. 2012, but unfortunately the owner sided with a young, immature, self-absorbed RG3 over his head coach, which totally sabotaged and submarined the 2013 season and stopped any momentum they had dead in its tracks. And then in 2015, after a division title, they lowballed the quarterback, never made him a legitimate offer to keep him, but even more damaging, didn't trade him for the first rounder that San Francisco would have given up after the 2016 season. You know, just sticking with the information we've observed on our own, okay? Just the information that's factual, that we've observed on their own. Bruce Allen, Dan Snyder, all of them, they've earned the criticism that the fans have expressed and that the media has expressed in all forms of communication. They've earned the punches the fans have thrown at them with significant attendance erosion and huge local television ratings decline. I've said this in the past, but nothing spoke more volumes about how far the franchise had fallen than a half-empty stadium in the home opener against the Colts last year. And that was after a season-opening win against the Cardinals with a new quarterback and Adrian Peterson rushing for nearly 100 yards. And then later on in the season, in a first-place showdown on Monday Night Football against a division rival, Philadelphia. And locally, the game does embarrassingly low television numbers. And outdrawn the next week TV ratings-wise by Dallas here locally. Dallas beat the Skins locally when the Skins were playing the Giants the following week. Stop with the media bashing. DC is not a tough sports media market. Again, it's not the softest, but it's far from the harshest. Our fan community, which includes fans of the team, and by the way, people in the media, like me, who aren't journalists. And by the way, I want to make sure, you know, and I've said this before, I don't do something that comes with the expectation of objectivity. That's not what I am, just to be clear. We've had this conversation before. Some of you think people like Grant and Danny and the Junkies or Zabe or Doc, that we're not reporters. We're not. Nobody that hosts a talk show is a reporter. Some of you get confused with that. All right, people who cover the team as reporters. Who's the beat reporter for the Post right now? Is it still Kareem Copeland?
Yeah.
Okay, so Kareem Copeland, objectivity is part of his job description, not mine. We are basically op-ed blabbers. That's what we do. We just blab. I'm a fan. I don't apologize for that. I go through the same roller coaster of emotions that all of you do. I talk about what I see and what I feel. Both of those things. I'm sometimes wrong about what I see, all right, but never wrong about describing how I feel. It's how I feel. And as far as the few of you who actually in your own head believe that the media is out there on its own when it comes to bashing Dan Snyder, Bruce Allen, and the organization, or somehow the media has influenced the way the fans feel about the organization, that's really ignoring the truth of it. The team's record during the Dan Snyder era speaks for itself. We don't even have to add all of the dysfunction and the drama on top of it. Bruce Allen, who said record is the only thing you should be judged on, has an abysmal record, an abysmal one. And this delusional discussion about how close they are, when let's not forget, last year they lost 6 games by double digits. 6! Only 3 other NFL teams last year in the entire NFL had more than that. And of the 6 double-digit losses, 4 were truly one-sided beatdown losses. They lost 4 games last year by 24 or more points. 4. That's hard to do in the NFL. Only the Cardinals had the same number. They had one win last year over a playoff team. One. That win was the Dallas win in October. They had one win over a team with a winning record last year. The Cowboy game also in October. Bruce Allen talked about 7-9 this year like they were close and it was all the injuries. Really? Their seven wins came against a group of teams that went 41-70-1. They weren't close. And the big trade that he unilaterally made, that is, for Alex Smith, along with giving him a contract extension, January 2018, the injury's unfortunate, obviously, but say whatever you want about Alex Smith's 6-4 record, and that's really what it was. They were going to lose to Houston had he not gotten hurt. He had not played very well. The fit with Jay Gruden had not become a comfortable one through 10 games. Maybe it would have gotten better. It could have. We'll never know, though. But the hashtag fire Bruce Allen thing wasn't started by any media member. It was started by what was left of a fan base that had had it. They were done. Nobody spoke more loudly about what the Redskins have become more than its fan base, and it didn't need any media influence to help it along. Got to stop with that. The media's influenced, or the media is the only group of people in this sports town, in this town, that seems to have a problem with Bruce and Dan. You're delusional. Now, Aaron, to a conversation I had with someone yesterday that I played golf with, and congratulations, by the way, to Nick and Devin. They beat me and my partner yesterday in a two-man competition, 2-1. We lost in 17. Anyway, Nick said something to me yesterday that made sense, and perhaps some of you have already thought about it, and I really hadn't thought about it this way, so I want to give him credit for bringing it up to me. But again, maybe you guys have thought about it and talked about it already. But he said, and he's a Redskins fan, he said, you got to play Haskins from the start. You have to find out next year if he's the right guy. Because if he isn't, next year's draft is loaded with quarterbacks that the Skins might be in position to take. So let's sort through that for a minute here. All right, first of all, it is true that you're not going to know anything of real substance about Haskins until he plays. You're not. You know, if Keenum is playing and Jay's being asked about the development of Haskins and Jay says, oh man, Dwayne looks great working with the scout team and he's really good in meetings and he's taking great notes and he's soaking up everything from Case and Colt, that means little. You know, you don't know until he's out there trying to duck live bullets. If he's going to be something or not. But secondly, it's also true that you may not learn much if you put him out there when he's not ready, when he's not anywhere near ready. So there's that part of it too. So it sort of leads me to this conclusion. If it's close, like if Case beats him out, but just barely, you got to play Haskins.
I agree.
If he's competitively right there with Case and Colt, but let's just say that Jay, because we know that Jay feels like he's got to win next year, would prefer to play the experienced guy over the inexperienced guy. But he admits to himself, and perhaps we know this from being at training camp and reporting, etc., that the summer competition and preseason games, the summer competition between Case, Colt, and Haskins is legitimately close. You got to play him.
Yep.
Next year could be a surprise year because it's always possible in the NFL, but more likely than not, it's a non-playoff season. If the competition at the quarterback position is close, don't mess around with it. Get him in there. The owner threw down the hammer in the draft room and said, "This is my guy. We're taking him." You need to find out sooner rather than later if Dan Snyder was right about Dwayne Haskins, because next year looks like it could be, draft-wise, a unique year for quarterbacks. Now, there's no chance, by the way, that Dan or Bruce will ever think of it in this way. They are convinced they're right, and there's no way they think they'll be picking in the top 10 next year. Even if they didn't draft Haskins, remember, Bruce believes that they've been close all along, and that really the key to a 9-7 playoff season, wild card playoff season next year, was health. They didn't even need to draft Haskins. It was all about health. But I guarantee you that Kyle Smith and the scouts would love to know much sooner rather than later if Haskins can do it. Because if he can do it, then they can think in another direction in 2020. If they find out he can't do it, and I know one season is tough to really make a definitive conclusion on it, but you're not going to have any way of determining anything if he doesn't play. But next year, look, the Dolphins traded for Rosen, and the Dolphins right now are being mocked to take Tua in every mock draft I think I've seen. All right, so they would be right to think that way. They would be right to think, look, if this is close, we got to play Dwayne Haskins. We got to find out. Because the best interest in the organization in winning long term is to get him in there if he's ready or if he's close enough to ready, and for us to find out if we made the right call or if Dan made the right call. Because if he made the right call, great. Well, you know, even if we go 5-11 with a rookie quarterback, but we know we got the right guy and we can take off from there and we don't have to think about quarterback. But next year's unique. It's a unique year. You know, it's not one of those years where people think there's, you know, that the draft is lacking in quarterbacks. It's Tua, it's Fromm, it's Herbert. All three being projected to be top five, top 10 picks.
Here's the one question with that, just based on that logic. You know, we know that Dan, or we think that Dan was the one who put his fist down and demanded it. What makes you think he'd give up after a year? What makes you think he'd allow another quarterback to come in?
It's totally fair. It's totally fair. But, you know, there are, look, the Cardinals traded up and drafted Josh Rosen number 10 last year. And by all accounts, everybody loved him there. You know, a lot of favorable response to Rosen. But Kyler Murray was a transcendent player. Maybe by the time we get to next year's draft, Tua or Herbert or Fromm is thought to be something like that, thought to be a can't miss. I don't even know if Kyler Murray is thought to be can't miss. But the point being, you know, you're going to have a lot more information on Haskins if he plays than if he doesn't play. But again, I throw out the caveat that if he's not ready, then it's unfair to him too. So we'll see. I mean, it's going to be really an interesting summer because, again, and I've said this since last Thursday, it's not like he's coming in and competing against Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes. He's competing against Case Keenum and Colt McCoy. Like, it shouldn't be a shock if he ends up being the better option. But I'm suggesting now, if it's close, even if he's slightly behind Case and loses the competition battle, you know, by a smidge, you got to play him because you got to find out. All right, I wanted to get to the Diana Russini interview yesterday. If you missed Diana yesterday from ESPN, she was on the podcast. It starts at the 21:43 mark yesterday. She was great. I enjoyed it. And some of you asked me how much I believed in her reporting last week and the things she said to me yesterday. And the easy answer, the simple answer is all of it. I believe all of it. You know, there are a couple of things, and I'll go through them in detail here, that I think maybe I believe most of it, but it's immaterial to the overall point or the overall report. Everything that she said yesterday and everything she's tweeted out and everything she reported on ESPN last week leading up to the draft, during the draft, and after the draft, I believe all of it pretty much. Diana reported that Dan wanted Haskins. Dan Snyder wanted Haskins, and the football people, the coaching staff and scouts, didn't want Haskins. I totally believe that. And I've mentioned before over the last week that some of the people that I rely on that I've trusted in the past, that this was their message as well. Doesn't mean, by the way, the football people are right and Dan is wrong. You know, you can form your own opinion on that. And we won't know for sure for a few years. It could prove to be Dan's finest moment as the team's owner. It could. But I do believe that the football people were not into Haskins at 15, but Dan was. Diane also said the frustration from the football people had a lot to do with the fact that they had worked all year putting together this board. And what was the point of it if it wasn't going to be followed? And because of that, the dynamic in the building right now isn't that great. In part because the frustration from the football people led to a lot of leaks last week. A lot of them to Diana and others. All right, and Dan wasn't happy at all. I believe that to be true, too. She also said that while it's not, and I think her quote was, it's not kumbaya in the building right now, which I agree with, it's also Jay's personality to move on. You know, he makes the best of what he has and moves on. And I agree with that, too. It's what I've said always about Jay. You know, he's honest to his own detriment at times, but he's also, when all is said and done, he's go along to get along. So he's going to make the best out of this. To the discussion about how pissed Dan was that there were leaks last week, Diana threw something into that part of the conversation that I actually want you to listen to. She's not sure if changes won't be made before the season. Listen to this portion of our discussion yesterday.
Kevin, I think this is layered. I think there's more going on in the building than we know about.
Yeah.
I don't think everything is kumbaya, and I'm not sure if changes will be made before the season starts, but I do know the one thing that this staff that is currently there, the pressure is high, and they need to win, and they know it.
So it's Diana's line where she says, I'm not sure if changes will be made before the season begins. Just throwing that into the conversation is pretty interesting because it speaks to how, you know, how difficult maybe it was last week, you know, how tense it was last week, how emotional it was last week for the football people who, you know, were basically told this is what we're doing, even though the board didn't say it. And then for the owner to see a lot of that stuff leaked. Personally, I believe that things, especially between Jay and perhaps Bruce and Dan, while they aren't great right now, I don't think it's going to lead to any change before the season begins. I would be very surprised by that. But I have been told that it's not the same relationship with Jay and Bruce that it used to be. Now, again, I think Jay adjusts. I think his personality is a personality where, you know, he wasn't happy in the moment, but he moves on and he'll make the best of it. He'll do, remember what Jim Zorn was told to do? Comply. I think Jay's going to comply. But I that's much more serious sounding, and it was for Zorn, for sure. It was a legal description of what he was doing. I don't think it's to that point, and I think Jay will move on and try to make it work. But I do think Diana's, you know, line, I'm not sure if changes will be made before the season begins, speaks to, you know, how much of a divide there was last week. She also said yesterday that the football people like Jones more than Haskins. I believe that some of the football people like Jones over Haskins, but I'm not sure everybody was in agreement on that. So when I said at the beginning, I believe almost everything that Diana said, this is the one area in which I would say, I don't know that every scout and every football coach was in on Jones over Haskins, but I think some of them were. What I do believe is that in retrospect, and perhaps even before it happened, and I've said this for the last week, I believe that some of the football people would have preferred Rosen for a second and even something better than Miami gave up, which was a fifth, a second and a third, or a second and a fourth. I think some of the football people would have preferred Rosen for a second and a fourth, call it, rather than taking any quarterback in this draft, not named Murray. On the Jones thing, the Daniel Jones thing, just so we're all clear on what Diana said to us, she said the football people had Jones higher rated than Haskins. But she was also very clear that if both had been on the board at 15, while the football people would have suggested if they were told they have to take a quarterback, would have said Jones, the Redskins were taking Haskins because the owner said they were taking Haskins. So you've seen some reporting that says, you know, in response to Gettleman's, you know, there were two other teams that had Jones, you know, would have taken Jones before 17, and one of them was potentially the Redskins. I believe it's true that some of the football people would have taken Jones over Haskins if they were told they had to take a quarterback. They didn't want to take a quarterback at 15. But it wouldn't have happened. So when you see reporting that says the Redskins were taking Haskins all along, that's true too, because Dan was taking Dwayne Haskins. It didn't matter what the football people said. Dan and Bruce were in on Haskins. I'm not sure all the I don't think all of the football people were Jones over Haskins, but I think some of them were. But again, I don't think any of them wanted a quarterback. Netting it out, really, I think that the football people wanted to stick to a board that they had built over a long period of time with a lot of hard work, and that board didn't have any quarterback other than Murray rated anywhere near 15. That's really more than anything else what I think happened last week. I don't think anyone thinks Haskins isn't an intriguing talent. You know, I don't think anybody that was in favor of Jones or Rosen over Haskins thinks that Haskins, you know, doesn't have some talent. I think they do. But I think Kyle Smith, the scouts, the coaches, whatever influence they had was an influence to say, let's stick to the board. But obviously it was trumped by what Dan Snyder wanted. By the way, Diana also told us yesterday that Bruce didn't like Kyler Murray. Remember she said that? Now, I've not heard anything about that. I don't know anything about that, but that's interesting too. What if he had slipped? Remember, you know, some of the stuff about if the Cardinals don't take him, it's a red flag. Quick word about Window Nation. Have you checked your spring checklist? Do you have a spring checklist, Aaron? I don't really have a spring checklist, but I do when winter is over and we turn the water from the main water source back on. I will go out to see and get the hose started. I'll do that. Some of you got to go out and check the lawnmower to see if it works. And what I'd ask all of you to do, and what Window Nation is suggesting, is you go around and you check your windows. You know, if you're struggling to get some of the windows open, or they're making noise, or one is cracked, or they're fogging up, it's probably time for some new energy-efficient windows from Window Nation. Right now, you can take advantage of their 33% off sale going on for your entire spring project, which includes installation. And by the way, it's not just for windows, it's for siding and doors too. The entire job with install is all 33% off. Plus, to make quality even more affordable, get a house of windows for as low as $69 a month. That's cheaper than your cell phone bill. And if you call this week, Window Nation will give you free blinds for every window you purchase. All right? Free blinds for every window you purchase. Think about it. 33% off your entire order, $69 a month, and you get brand new energy efficient windows plus free blinds. If you're in the market for new windows, siding, or doors, give Window Nation a call. First of all, there's no risk. I mention this all the time, but it's important because you don't want to get stuck with, you know, somebody coming out there and feeling like you have to go with them. They're going to come out. They're going to go through your house. I've been through this before, and many people have as well that I know. They're going to come through. They're going to tell you which windows should be replaced, which windows are fine. They're going to give you a price. That price is good for 60 days. You can do with it what you choose. If you want to move forward with them, great. If you don't, you don't have to. Call 866-90-NATION right now. Call them at 866-90-NATION. Mention my name. You can go to windownation.com as well, but take advantage of this great sale right now on new windows. 866-90-NATION. You will not be disappointed. Tell them that I sent you. I don't know if you saw this, Aaron, but Todd McShay this morning, and I just saw this as we were going through the opening segment. Todd McShay just put his 2020 NFL mock draft out.
Of course he did.
And these things are interesting because not for the players necessarily, but I'll always like to see, and we've talked about this the last couple of days, where people project teams to finish. The Redskins are number 4 on his board, picking 4th next year. Bleacher Report had him picking 1st and had him taking Chase Young, the pass rusher from Ohio State. McShay has him picking 4th and taking Chase Young from Ohio State.
Makes sense.
He also has Tua going number 1 overall to Miami. Jerry Jeudy, the wide receiver, could be one of those incredibly high-rated wide receivers that we see every once in a while going number 2 to Arizona. Grant Delpit, the safety from LSU that Ben was talking about yesterday. Ben Standig going 3 to Denver. And then Chase Young to the Redskins. And then the other two quarterbacks, Justin Herbert, 5 to the Raiders. And then Jake Fromm. He's got Jake Fromm. Where does he have Jake Fromm?
Maybe he doesn't have Jake Fromm because sometimes these people won't put underclassmen in there if there's not, well, you know, definite.
Well, Tua will be an underclassman.
Yeah, that's true.
Did I just miss Jake Fromm here? No, he doesn't have Jake Fromm. He doesn't have Jake Fromm in the first round.
Oh.
Is that possible?
Unless there's something I'm missing. I mean, Jake Fromm should go ahead of Herbert.
I think so, too. I like Jake Fromm. Hold on. Maybe I just went through this too quickly. This is great podcasting right now. We could just edit this, but why?
Yeah, no,
he's not.
He's not on there.
Yeah. Okay. Whatever. All right. Guess who spoke yesterday? Somebody we rarely hear speak. Kyle Smith spoke yesterday on Redskins Nation with Larry Michael, the director of scouting for the Redskins, the guy whose responsibility it was to put this draft board together for the Redskins, sat down with Larry. Kyle doesn't do a lot of media. I don't know if it's because they don't let him do a lot of media. I'm not necessarily sure. I've asked for him in the past, haven't gotten him, but I don't think many people have. But he did sit down with Larry yesterday. And what I thought we'd do here is there's nothing, you know, significantly profound about anything that came out of the interview, but it was nice to hear Kyle speak and talk about the players that they selected. So I thought over the next few days, you know, we'll just trickle some of it out. Many of you perhaps have already heard some of it, but I did want to start with, you know, Larry's opening and the discussion about Dwayne Haskins.
Kyle Smith is here. We're going to talk about this year's Redskins draft, which has been lauded around all the so-called experts. Kyle, like I told you yesterday, maybe the first time I've been associated with any type of straight A report card.
Yeah, well, no, we are, you know, I'm glad everybody's excited because we're excited about it too. We feel good.
Let's go through the rounds. First of all, day one, you obviously got Haskins and Sweat. And were you sweating as Haskins was on that board?
Yeah, no, approached? No, it was definitely an exciting time. We got, you know, obviously a quarterback was one of the priorities that we had with, you know, the guys that we have to throw Haskins into the mix. He's an extremely, extremely talented quarterback with all of the skill set, and he can be as good as he wants to be. And we're excited about the opportunity for him to come in and learn behind some veteran leadership, learn from Jay Gruden, Kevin O'Connell, Matt Kavanaugh, Tim Rattay, all these guys with tremendous knowledge of the position, along with Colt and Case and obviously Alex.
So when you look at him, when you look at Haskins, he played 1 year as a starter, but he did have some grooming there. What's he got to work on the most?
Well, I think anytime he's a young kid. I mean, he's 21 years old. He's a one-year starter. The experience that, you know, that's obviously going to play a factor into how you grow as a quarterback. But the game's different. You know, the college game is different than the NFL game. What we have to do is break down, kind of, you know, get inside of his mind and let him understand the, you know, West Coast offense, understanding defenses, coverages, all those things that are different from the college game. And he's going to have a chance to do that.
And he will compete, according to the coach, which means competition is good, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, no, we want, I think every guy that we drafted this year, that's the goal. We want these guys to come in and play right away. But we've got obviously a pretty good roster to begin with. So they're all going to come in and compete.
So there's a little bit of Kyle Smith. Some of you haven't really heard him speak a lot over the years. He's bright. Everybody that knows him well thinks that he is an eventual general manager in this league at some point. His father was, A.J. Smith. You know, nothing he said, nor would I have expected anything that he would have said, would have changed my mind about what we talked about earlier. I don't think Haskins was the number one quarterback on their board. I don't think he was a guy in their top 15. I think Kyle is among the guys that probably were a little bit frustrated that they didn't follow the board. You heard him say, you know, we got a pretty good team anyway, you know, coming in. And I think that's the way a lot of the people out there feel. I think, you know, the injury thing really is among the guys in Ashburn, not just Dan and Bruce, but, you know, a lot of the coaches. If we had been healthy, we would have been a playoff team last year, and it would have been close. You know, we've gone through this a million times. It would have been close to a 9-7 and a potential wild card berth. But anyway, he had some thoughts on Montez Sweat and all of the other picks, including Bryce Love, and we'll play some of those for you tomorrow and on Monday as well. But it was good to hear him and get his thoughts. You know, the Cowboys put Will McClay out there, and I think others earlier this week, talking about every draft choice and how it came about in great detail. And this seems to be a trend I don't think it's a trend with the Patriots. I don't think the Patriots are sitting there and trying to at least give the perception of transparency. But good for Kyle Smith to go on and you know, you get to hear from him. You know, I don't know how much you can't press him on that show. Obviously, that's not what's going to happen on Redskins Nation. But in that particular situation, to be honest with you, like if he were to come on the show, and I've asked the PR people about him coming on the show, even if you push about what the board was and how much Dan, he's not going to give you a real answer, nor should he in that particular situation. All right, let's bring in Scott Van Pelt for his Thursday visit. We missed you last week because it was a heavy draft day, and I apologize because I don't know that I even called you to say that we didn't need you on Thursday.
No, you just ignored me.
That's what I think I did. I didn't mean to. It was the NFL draft, and I guess I thought you would have just assumed that perhaps we were going to be heavy on Redskins draft day stuff. But that's my fault, and I thought about it actually just as we called you a moment ago, that we didn't have you on last Thursday. But
here's the thing. I didn't care.
I know you didn't. But you noticed. You noticed that I didn't call you.
And yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I'm apologizing for that.
So I have to heckle you a little bit, so I did.
You really were annoying the other night. Because I've asked you for, I don't know, 3 years, maybe 2 years, I've been asking you to give Game of Thrones a chance. You won't do it. And then for some unknown reason, you decided to watch on Sunday night. And while you were watching, you decided to bother me, to ask me questions. Who's this person? Who's that person? What's she doing? By the way, your tweet was the best. It was hysterical. This was what Scott tweeted as he was watching his first ever episode of Game of Thrones. Watching a recording of Game of Thrones with zero context or understanding is actually awesome. No attachment to anyone. There's lots of zombies. Relentless. This girl in the maze is spunky as hell. Badass. Blue dragon fire guy seems like a tough out. Zombies in the house now. Tense. That was major league trolling. And the responses were outstanding to it, which was what you got. I mean, you got over 15,000 likes to that particular tweet.
Yeah. Can I take that to the grocery store to buy goods and services?
No,
I cannot.
You can't. But
the key word in that is recording. I was texting you after the show was over because I knew that I wanted to give you time to process it. You sent me a text like a junior high school child. I can't breathe. Because you were so, you're so impacted by
that was
the show about
that was sarcasm. That was
zombies.
Sarcasm for you, by the way.
Okay, fine. But I was texting you after the fact, so don't act like it was like during like a Maryland game with 2 minutes left, and I'm like, they need to run something for Wiggins. Well, like, I didn't do that.
Well, the truth is, when you did start texting me, because I started it late, I had recorded it, and I started a little bit late, I was still in the process of finishing it up. But whatever. What made you sit down to watch Sunday night?
I had read so much about 11 weeks of shooting and the expense of the episode, and I figured, all right, well, this is just like a movie, so I'll watch this sort of cinematic event. I don't care that I don't know, and I don't plan to watch further. I just thought, all right, well, here's this battle, the Long Night, Winterfell, whatever the hell it is, and the beginning of it starts, and it's very tense, and I'm like, all right, well, this is I can't see it very much. I mean, it is at night. They don't have lights out in the Winterfell landscape, but whatever. So I watched it, and you know, this is the part that I don't get. The people that were invested and who have gone along for the ride are like lecturing me about how dare you do this. Like, who the hell are you to tell me what I get to do when I'm sitting on my couch at my house? Like, I watched it, so who cares?
Well, I don't have a problem with you watching it with no context. I mean, yeah, they shouldn't be. I don't know why anybody would be upset about that. I just had a problem with you.
With the texting?
With you texting me about who's this person and who's that person. Because that's childlike, which you are, which you are sometimes.
Well, I did it to bother you, so just because you'd given me, you know, such a hard time about watching, so I just figured I'd ask inane questions throughout the episode, and then some of it I actually was curious, just so I could have a little context. But anyway, good times.
We haven't talked since the Caps got eliminated from the playoffs. You're a huge fan. What did you think?
I hated it. I hated it more than anything because it was they were better for the first period and a half, and then it's weird. They weren't better. They didn't deserve to win. Like the Hurricanes it just felt inevitable, and then it when it ends, like there's just nothing that matches the tension of that. Waiting with dread for just, oh God, please, anytime the puck's in the zone. And I'll say this, I think I told you this off air, I want to say it here on the record, that next to Maryland sports, nothing is do I emotionally invest in more. Granted, it's only in the playoffs. I watch during the regular season from afar. I keep tabs on things. Everything's good. They're in the playoffs, yada, yada. I don't watch game in and game out the way I watch the Stanley Cup playoffs. I love the Stanley Cup playoffs. And them losing was, like, gutting. Can I say that? No, but I was pissed. And I was so mad that they didn't have any more games. And when that puck goes in, and Williams, former Cap, just puts it on net, and then the kid that knocked the goal out on the other end, saved the day for the Hurricanes, has the goal, and like the hands go up, and you're like, oh crap, that's it, it's just over, and you felt like you're going to throw up for an hour and a half, and then the season's over. I really, really love Stanley Cup playoff hockey, and that's sort of a revelation for me in the past, I don't know, 5 years. Like, I really love it.
Well, but that's not what you just said. You just said that the Caps are your number two behind Maryland sports.
They are, emotionally, without question. I don't invest a thing in the Wizards. I don't invest a thing in the Redskins. And the Orioles won 47 games last year.
What if the Orioles were, in the playoffs last year and pushing, a World Series possibility? I've known you for 30 plus years.
Yeah,
the Orioles would be your number two behind Maryland in that situation.
The tension of playoff baseball feels very similar to me to the tension of playoff hockey.
Yeah.
Like you're on edge. You're on edge in a way that's different. I don't know. Like this is surprising to me because it wasn't like a stated goal. I didn't decide, I'm just going to love the Caps. But here's the difference. They're good every year. They're in the playoffs every year. They have had these disappointments and these heartbreaks. And by the way, this is another first-round series, 2-0 lead and a two-goal lead in Game 7 at home twice. If they don't have that Stanley Cup, people are horrified. It's like people kind of shrugging and going, they won the Stanley Cup last year, so I guess we're all right. No, we're not all right. This sucked. I was crushed, but I really, really love the watching them play playoff hockey. I think it's just incredibly exciting. The Stanley Cup playoffs have been so far superior to the NBA playoffs. It's not even funny.
The Stanley Cup playoffs, I agree with you. I love hockey, playoff hockey. Love it. And I've watched, even since the Caps have been eliminated,
I've watched
a lot of the Carolina Islanders series. I readily admit that. I watched last night for a while as Carolina, pulled away late, and they've got a 3-0 series lead, which for Caps fans, I'm sure they're thinking, oh my God, we would have beaten the Islanders and we would have been in the Eastern Conference Finals. But who the hell knows with hockey? It's such a guesswork thing. But I know, because you said this to me off air, that you were surprised that people didn't feel the sting of it as much because of the Stanley Cup last year. I think there's some grace here. There's a huge grace period after last year.
And I suppose to a degree I understand it. I'm just saying that Stanley Cup sweatshirt, T-shirt, golf shirt that you bought is a hell of a bulletproof vest a year later, where you can just shrug off, again, a 2-0 series lead against a team you're supposed to be better than. And a game 7 at home with a 2-goal lead twice. I mean, and I don't know. I went back and I had a DVR of it. I went back and like there were like four different times they should have scored. Ovechkin had one. There was a penalty, and who's the guy? Haglund could have scored. But you know,
yeah.
None of this matters.
Yeah,
they lost.
Haglund hit the post. Yeah.
Yeah.
Vrana hit the post in overtime.
And that too. But I mean, you know what? That would have felt like they stole it. Carolina felt like they deserved to win, and they did. And now they're, you know, steamrolling towards Stanley Cup final, perhaps, or Eastern Conference final anyway. But I'm amazed at how much I enjoy it. And, you know, for a few days I was like, I'm not watching hockey. But then I realized, well, it's kind of my job. I have to talk about it with Barry. So it would be stupid to not watch the games. And the crowd in Carolina is incredible. I mean, like, it's a decade almost removed from the playoffs. So they're having fun, which that's what you're supposed to do. It's been fun to watch.
To the NBA playoffs, other yes. than the lack of anything compelling on the floor in terms of a great series or anticipation for one, I mean, I think Houston, Golden State, there's been some anticipation for that. But what haven't you liked beyond the actual games?
The game is the main problem.
Right, you didn't know where I was trying to lead you into a conversation we've already had, I thought, and that is all of the whining and the complaining about the officiating.
Well, right, that's where I was going to go.
Okay,
the topic of officiating and the sense of outrage that these players have when they don't get calls, it's just exhausting, and it's really interesting. I'm not going to pretend like I know Chris Paul. I do not. I have spent time on a couple of occasions at events away from sports with him, and he couldn't be more chiming, but more charming and bright and interesting and interested and a guy that you enjoy talking to. And then he gets on the court and he turns into an absolute monster. He's just insufferable on the court in a way that I think hurts them. And I did a thing on SportsCenter about Harden and about the drawing fouls on threes. And I mean, I think he's the most difficult person in the sport to defend and to officiate because he's so clever at creating the contact. And I don't know if that's your sort of your stated goal is to kind of trick people into getting getting three free throws because you're such a good free throw shooter. I don't know. That just feels like not the goal that you'd want if you're the league. And everyone's crying and complaining about everything. And then it becomes like a 3-day topic of conversation in between the games. So I don't know, I guess absent the drama on the floor, we manufacture that, but it's just, I don't know what the fix is.
Well, how about the revelation or the story from The Athletic, I think it was, about how Houston had this incredible memo put together for the league about how they were completely robbed out of their series last year with Golden State, and there were 81 missed calls or non-calls that would have resulted in 18.6 more points in Game 7. I don't think anything screams, you know, sour grapes more than something like that. To be emotional in the moment or in the days afterwards and to complain and to whine about officiating, but to actually sit down and put together a lengthy report of how you were screwed out of 18.6 points seems to me to really sort of defeat the purpose.
Kevin, the audacity to suggest you were wronged by the officials for 18.6 points in a game where you went 0 for 27 from 3 to start the game. Did that play any role in your demise, do you think? 0 for 27. Was that in the memo? And then here's the thing, Kevin. This is one of my most pointed, most specific pet peeves that we tend to do in sports. Maybe even me and you, but fans for sure. If this, then that. Well, okay, if this foul call, we would have gotten,
of
what,
course.
Three free throws. Then that means that every single thing that happens after you should have gotten that foul call is different. The action stopped. We now went to the free throw line. We inbounds. Maybe we run different sets. Maybe Klay Thompson gets hot because we run something. You can't deal in absolute saying that every single thing would have happened as it did other than we would have got the stuff that would have benefited us. Like, imagine that. It's like creating an alternate universe. And, Kevin, the wording wasn't just that you cost us that game. It's like you very likely, it was you cost us the NBA title.
I know.
I mean, good God, that's so infuriating. And my understanding is that the league was livid, as you'd guess they'd be. Like they want to say, shut the bleep up with this crap. Don't miss 27 straight threes. And don't presume that everything happens as it did in your memo based on if we were to call a foul. I mean, are fouls missed? Sure. The two-minute report says as much every single game. But going back and trying to regrade history based on that is, I'll say this. One more thing.
Yeah.
I know I'm rambling.
No. I love it.
The New Orleans Saints being furious about the outcome of the NFC Championship game, to me, is justified. Because you're talking about a play that absolutely was interference. And if it wasn't interference, it was a personal foul.
And it was at the end of the game.
Because the player got fined for the hit. And it would have resulted in an ability for the Saints to take knees and kick an extra point-length field goal. And that only that is what changed the outcome of the game and thus the participant in the Super Bowl.
Right.
The Saints, to me, have a beef. They're regrading the last one play, which would have resulted in an extra point-length field goal. So I'll buy that. Houston's going back and replaying 48 minutes and regrading the tape. That's what bothers me.
I had forgotten that they had started 0 for 27 from the floor, and I just pulled up the box score, and it reminded me, too, that my favorite player, Trevor Ariza, went 0 for 12 in that Game 7 against Golden State last year. And the Rockets finished 7 of 44 from behind the arc in that game. Yeah, all of that stuff. I think what we've seen here for too long is that the referees allow a level of badgering of them and confrontation with them that, I don't know, maybe it's generational. It's off-putting to me to watch it so consistently every night. And, you know, for most people that don't even pay attention until the postseason, then it becomes an outrage because you've got more people that are actually watching games. But it's that way every night in the NBA. I don't know why they don't set the tone, that there isn't some ability for the referees to keep these guys off them. You know, from the people have compared it to the way it used to be, but they'll say the way it used to be is that there was a better relationship between referees and Larry Bird, referees and Kevin McHale, and they would be able to talk it out even though they were upset in the moment. I don't remember ever the jumping on the officials, the complaining of missed calls and bad calls like we have now.
I don't remember, you know, the Magic Bird, Dr. J. I don't remember the 80s or the 90s specifically being better as it relates to the officials, but it certainly the modern star in the NBA has been empowered to such a degree where there's just this, we're entitled to everything we want, and if we don't get what we want, then bleep you. I guess. I mean, that's what it seems like that. It seems like that to a degree. It's just, it's an issue. I mean, but the league is the most fueled by the
stars,
the drama of the stars, yeah. And then the drama of the stars and social media as a tool to be this cycle where they're the fuel for it. They'll air their squabbles there, which lead to more conversation on your show, my show, all the other supporting shows, which fill the gaps in between the actual games. I mean, Woj told me, Adrian Wojnarowski told me, a GM said, maybe I've told you this on the air here, but he said the faucet of crazy is wide open in our league. Like, just, it's never off. There's just always something. And then the off season becomes even more insane with the speculation of who will go where and the guys taking shots at each other. I mean, it is fascinating. But this type of theater involving the officials, to me, is just really, really tiresome.
All right, just one last thing on the NBA. Who do you like? Like, we're down to, you know, four in each conference. Who do you like? Because, I mean, you've got 1-2-0 series, right? That's it. Everything else is 1-1.
Yeah, I really like the Bucks all year. And then they played that first game against Boston and looked scared. And Giannis looked tight.
Tight.
Middleton for them. Chris Middleton is a star. And does not, he gets the least discussion for any excellent player in the NBA. and I'll fight you on that. If he was an all-star
this year, and he lit it up during the All-Star game, if you recall, in the first half. But you're right. Most people don't know Chris Middleton.
Nobody talks about him.
Yeah,
you know why?
Because he's been good for a long time.
He hasn't yelled at officials. And right. He doesn't tweet. So no one talks about him. But the other night, he was 7 of his first 9 from 3 when Giannis was struggling a little bit.
He looked nervous. Go ahead. I was just going to say, I talked about it yesterday. You know that I liked Boston before this series, and I said it on the podcast. I thought Milwaukee would not be in the NBA Finals this year, whether it was Boston or Toronto. I thought one of those two teams would beat them. But I didn't think it would be because Antetokounmpo would actually get nervous and tight. He was clearly that in Game 1, and in the first half the other night, he looked to be a mental mess. And then Middleton hit some shots, loosened it up, and then all of a sudden he felt, I think, a little bit of relief that they had a lead.
Well, Legler and I did that on the show the other night. The point being that the guys that were the role players really allowed Giannis to take a deep breath and relax. It wasn't all on his shoulders. Now, ultimately, Giannis ends up with 29, which I believe was more than Middleton, but it was when Middleton got the buckets that allowed kind of Giannis to take a deep breath. They have steamrolled people this year. Best record, most blowouts. And Boston's been, as we know, searching all year. I really like Milwaukee beforehand. And the way they played the first game and a half had me shook. But I still like them. I still like the Bucks. I think it'll be the Bucks and the Warriors in the end. It's funny. This Portland-Denver series is sort of like the other one, right? It's like, all right, which is odd to me because Denver's been a wonderful story all year. They're fun to watch. Jokic is amazing. He's like, you look at him, you go, how's this dude do this? And then, you know, Dame Lillard is I think, a breathtaking star, but he wasn't even great last night, and they won and stole back home court. So, I don't know. I like the Bucks and the Warriors, but, I mean, that's, hey, the 2-1 seeds. But that's kind of the NBA, whereas in the NHL, the 1 seeds are all knocked out in the first round.
Yeah, I don't see anybody beating Golden State in a best-of-7. I think they're going to win the title again. Whether it's against Milwaukee, Toronto, or Boston, or Philadelphia, for that matter. All right, one last thing before I let you run. Two things. Number one, why isn't Tiger playing Quail Hollow? I thought this was a good course for him.
Yeah, he's done well there. I have no idea. I saw that video where he was eating cake and he was walking around like he had just done legs or like his back had seized up. Like I don't know. Is he all right? I have no idea. I mean, he's been off the grid since Augusta, which I get. I mean, I think.
Well, he's visiting the White House either today or tomorrow. I read that last night.
There you go, his golfing buddy. So I don't know why he's not playing. I would guess that he understands his body and the schedule being leading up to a major, in a couple weeks in Bethpage, and the need to be right for that. Because now with April, May, June, July, going major, 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 you know, you don't have that gap in the middle to kind of to free things up. I would guess he'd want to play Memorial as well, where, you know, he's been as good as any place during his career, Jack's tournament in between the PGA and the U.S. Open. But I don't know.
By the way, were you being sarcastic? I know that they've played golf together before, but are they buddies?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I said golfing buddy because they play golf. I say that about anybody. Like Tony and Mike Wilbon are President Obama's golfing buddies.
I think Tony's played with Obama more than I don't know if I'm supposed to disclose this, and maybe, but I don't think it's a problem now. But I think Tony may be, in terms of a non, you know, government type of a citizen, I don't think anybody's played more golf with Obama than Tony.
Which is an amazing thing. What a cool! They ought to write a book about it.
They should.
But you know what? I would guess that those moments and those memories aren't for sale. Like I would think they belong to them, which is a cool thing.
All right. The other thing that I was going to just mention to you is if you had any big thoughts about the NFL draft, the Redskins, Haskins, and also you called me yesterday about Theismann's jersey. What did you do on that? Did you end up doing something show?
I did, and it was very helpful because my reaction to Joe's reaction, where the quote was, I want to sit down and talk on him, I haven't decided yet. And my reaction was, you don't get to decide who wears your number. It's not retired. And then as you explained, it was a protected number. And in a way, he kind of does need to sign off, which puts the player in a terrible spot, because what if he decided for whatever reason, and I'm not speaking specific to Haskins, but what if it were a player that he didn't want to wear his jersey?
Right.
Then Theismann looks like a total clown. So it puts him in an impossible spot. Anyway, so you were helpful to me in helping me understand that actually Haskins sort of did the right thing, reached out to say, hey, listen, I'd love to do this. They sat down and talked. Joe gave it his blessing, and off we go. You know, first number seven in burgundy and gold in 30-some-odd years. But as far as the draft, because they continue to draft guys from Bama, and it was big-time program guys and skill position guys, it was a bunch of people that I'd seen a lot. I liked Paris Campbell the best of the Ohio State wide receivers, but the guy they got, McLaurin, like, he's a guy that's a difference maker. The receiver they got out of NC State, I don't know if he had a bad combine or what, but he was supposed to be like a second-round guy.
I know.
You get Love and you get Geis from last year, who's might as well be a rookie because he got hurt, and you add a bunch of youth to that backfield. Haskins obviously is the big wild card. I know you and Cooley did a bunch of things about how he can throw it, but there's, you know, some bust potential Cooley believes there. But I know the grades, which I laugh at, because who the hell knows if they're good or not. But the draft was well received by people that are, you know, football, in the know football people. So I think they've got some talent on defense. They need to upgrade the offense. They took a bunch of guys that could, in theory, if Love and Geis are healthy, you add them to the backfield, it would seem like quite an upgrade. So, I mean, it was a very positive draft, I think, beyond the fact that everyone got freaked out that, you know, Snyder came in and steamrolled everyone in the first pick because he wanted to take another quarterback. And the last time that happened, we all know what happened.
Yeah. And we think he did do that. I think Diana and everybody else's reporting on that was accurate. All right, thanks. I'll talk to you later. And if you want to join me for Sunday night, you can do so. But I'd prefer if the conversation about the show took place after the show was over. That's all.
Well, it did.
I know,
it
but
did,
I was still watching.
Well, then all you need to do is say, hey, I'm watching it on recording. Please stop. I was doing it to annoy you, and it worked. So it's one of the few times in our friendship that I feel like I've done that.
The only thing you've done.
You once pretended to play out an entire Wizards game over a gambling result, and you made up the whole thing.
Hold on for a second. No one's going to understand that. But you and I had bet. It was Wizards versus somebody. I can't even remember.
Hawks.
It was the Hawks? Okay, so this is
the Hawks.
And we both had I don't know who we had. We either had the Wizards or the Hawks, either getting or giving. I don't even remember what it was, but you were nowhere near a TV, and it was before the days you could get all the information on your phone, and you were asking me to give you play-by-play of the game, and we were losing the game big. I mean, we were getting crushed, but I decided to fabricate a different ending for you.
I want people who are listening right now to understand what he just said. We had bet on a game. We were losing said game. I had no access to the information. And so Kevin Sheehan did play-by-play for a game where he faked a game and told us we won. And it went on for half an hour at least.
Yeah. It was, I don't know if
it was. And you were lying about the result. And we actually got crushed and we lost. And you're going to give me crap about texting you about a show that was over. You made up a fake result with fake play-by-play.
I did, but if I recall, it's because you had done something very similar like a few weeks preceding that. Like I had called you, and this was, again, in the days where you couldn't get information over your phone, and we weren't calling George Michael's sports line, you know, the 202-844-2525 number. Was that it? I think it was. Where you got the scores, where George updated you on scores.
I thought it was 3-6-2-4-4.
That's
4,
what it was.
I thought that was it.
I think that's what it was. And I think there was another situation, and you basically just told me outright that we had lost. And I know it's different because it ended up being happiness because we had actually won the game. But still, you had me, you know, you had me disappointed until I got home and found out that we had actually won.
But okay.
I don't. You know what? This is boring for
lie,
people. What?
If I made up a lie that benefited you, then it benefited you. And I didn't go through 30 minutes of making up fake play by, oh, Rulin. Rulin's got in the bucket. Hey, here they come. Yeah. Here they come, the Bullets. you idiot.
All right, whatever. So, no one cares about this. I got to
go. No one cares about this, but they should care about it just to understand what kind of animal they're dealing with every day. It's someone that would make up a fake score and lie to his friend.
It was fun. I remember, you know, this was a long time ago. I want to say that Christian Laettner was playing for the Hawks.
I don't know, but I told you in the middle, I'm like, you're making this up, and you thought you had me, but really you
no.
didn't. I just kind of
okay,
let
so
go
then it wasn't a big deal. All right, see ya. I'm gone. I'm done with you. Scott Van Pelt, everybody, every Thursday here on the podcast. Quick word about Scentbird here for a minute. It's time for somebody to come up to you and say, man, you smell amazing. What cologne are you wearing? Most of you don't even know the cologne you're wearing. And if you're not wearing cologne, maybe you should be. Scentbird's a new way to discover new colognes or perfumes without having to buy an entire bottle. It's important because good colognes and perfumes can be very expensive, and many of you aren't sure exactly what you want, or you've just gotten tired of what you're wearing. Maybe somebody gave this to you as a gift several years ago, and you've been wearing the same thing ever since. Well, you want to smell great, and you think you have some good taste, but you're not entirely sure, and that's why you should use Scentbird also, because they make it easy for you. They've got 450 designer brands to choose from: Gucci, Tom Ford, Kenneth Cole, Burberry, Prada, and a lot more. You choose the cologne or perfume you want to try, and they'll send you a 30-day supply. You can check out user ratings and reviews on any fragrance. They've got a quiz you can take online at scentbird.com that will help you discover a more personalized recommendation. Here's the offer right now for my listeners only. Get 50% off your first month today. That's only $7.50 for your first cologne or perfume. Go to scentbird.com/KSDC. Use my code KSDC, Kevin, Steve, Douglas, Charlie, for 50% off your first month. Again, that's scentbird.com/KSDC for your first cologne or perfume for just $7.50. Sign on, smell amazing. All right, it was good to catch up with Van Pelt. That's always fun. He's on with us every Thursday. A friend of mine, Howard Craw, who we've been friends for many, many years. In fact, if you want to know the truth, it's 25 years now.
No way. Really? We go back that far?
The company that I was involved in that merged with a company that Howard was an investor in happened 25 years ago.
Start calling me Howie, please.
Is that what you want me to call you now?
Yeah, okay. It's no longer Howard. Wall Street days are over.
Okay.
I'm Howie.
All right, you're Howie now. Howie worked on Wall Street for many years, and he came in today because he was in town and he's doing a podcast, which we're going to have a chance to talk about down the road a little bit. But he was mentioning to me that a guy that was a friend of his and a guy I used to play basketball with all the time at Sport and Health, at Bethesda Sport and Health, this guy, Seth Goldman, who started Honest Tea. Many of you know that product, and he did very well with that. That you were just mentioning that today his latest venture went public.
It's about to open, Kevin. It hasn't opened yet. The name of the company is Beyond Meat. Let me just take you back how it happened. Seth had this incredible vision with Honest Tea. He was one of the first people to bring fair trade, social responsibility, organic, and he eventually sold that company to Coca-Cola. In 2012, Ethan Brown, I believe one of the foremost experts on climate change, came and found Seth because the number one problem with climate change is meat, M-E-A-T, cows, agriculture, gases. So he had this vision of creating a product out of pea protein to create meat without the animals, the slaughterhouses.
So does it taste good?
It's phenomenal.
Seriously?
Seriously.
Come on.
I am telling you, you could get this at Carl Jr.'s, BurgerFi. They're selling it everywhere, Kevin. Get out from behind your desk.
We never do this, but this is actually stuff that really interests me, and I follow much outside of the sports show that I do. And you've been a good friend for a long time. And this Beyond Meat is going public today, and it looks like it's going to open in a very healthy way.
Incredibly.
On, by the way, what appears to be a bad market day, but that's beside the point. But I'm fascinated by this particular entrepreneur, Seth, who's been a phenomenal entrepreneur forever, but that this particular product is being backed by the group of people that you just told me before we went on is behind this. Tell everybody beyond me who the investors are in
this
thing.
So back in the earliest days, Kleiner Perkins, which you know from Silicon Valley, their Facebook, their everything, right? So then the ex-CEO of McDonald's, at one point Tyson's invested, but they've been bought out of
it. Tyson Foods.
Tyson Foods. But here it is. Leonardo DiCaprio.
DiCaprio,
right? Kyrie Irving, I believe Shaquille, this 8 or 9 other big
high
NBA players,
worth,
high
sports,
visible
entertainment.
Sports. Beyond Meat is all over the NBA. The NBA players are eating this in droves. If you go to the website, you can see videos and clips.
Have you had the product?
So many times,
really?
You know.
But I mean, you're
my
a health
daughter.
Freak.
My daughter Natalie is vegan.
Yeah.
When this came out, she was beyond excited. I've been eating it now since the inception, and every person that I've ever asked to try it has thanked me. It isn't for vegans. It isn't for vegetarians. It's for the average person that's trying to eat healthier. So
it says that the company was founded by Ethan Brown.
Yes, Ethan Brown is the guy who I told you. So 2012, after Seth sold Honest Tea, he was brought on to be... I believe his title is executive chairman.
Got it.
So while he was winding down, he was wearing two hats. This is one of the few companies, Kevin, where it's doing good and the people are good. They are changing the world. This is a $1 trillion industry. I'm not saying anything about
just
valuation.
Tell me real quickly before we go. Tell me about the deal. It got priced where?
So they offered about 9 million shares. Mm-hmm. The initial filing range was 19 to 21. Mm-hmm. Demand was strong. It ended
what
up getting priced.
What does it value the company at?
I believe they said, I think it was at $1.6
billion. Jesus God.
But I think if it opens up where they're saying it's going to open, it could be... $2 or $3 billion. So, again, don't quote me on the numbers, but this is a company that's attacking a $1 trillion industry.
We should have gone to work for Seth a long time ago.
I asked him. He said I wasn't qualified. So that's why I'm doing a podcast, and I'll come back to you in a few weeks.
You are.
And we'll talk about it.
Because Howard, or Howie, now he wants to be referred to, he is the best salesperson I've ever known in my life, and he is really a motivational speaker. And he's become that in recent years, not to mention his very successful Wall Street career and a good friend. All right, I'll talk to you soon.
Could I give one plug?
Yeah.
HowieDoinIt.com. HowieDoinIt.com or Facebook or Instagram. Join me any morning at 7 a.m. for a little live chat.
It's like a short thing. It's a motivational thing to start your day. And you're
resiliency.
Down there, and you're down there on the beach in Florida somewhere.
Wherever the road takes me. Kevin, it's awesome to see you and congratulations.
I love you.
Love listening to you. Amazing what you're doing. Congratulations, buddy.
Well, that was a little bit of a change up there. We don't do that very often, but Howie, Howard, for 30 years, 25 years, but now it's Howie, is a really good friend of mine, and he's been very successful, and he's got a new deal going, and hopefully he got some friends and family stock. I didn't want to ask him because I don't know if he did or didn't, but hopefully he got some Beyond Meat friends and family stock, and it's a really good day for him. HowieDoinIt.com. That's Howie, HowieDoinIt.com. A plug for my buddy and his new business down in Florida. All right, what else? I think that's it today, right? We did a lot today.
We did do a lot today, unless you want to talk a little bit about Sean Miller or something like that.
But. Nah, I haven't been following it that closely. I know that
some
Sean
of the
Miller
transcripts are amazing
about him, about what's his face saying that Sean Miller,
Book Richardson,
that paid the guy $5,000?
$10,000 a month out of his own pocket.
Ayton.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what we didn't mention? We didn't mention that Bruno Fernando is going to stay in the draft, which we thought would be the case. Good luck to him. He was a really exciting and a memorable Maryland player for 2 years.
Yeah, he is going to go down as one of my all-time favorites to watch. I just wish we saw him for a few more years and on, teams that had more success.
By the way, with that announcement and others, yesterday, I guess, was the deadline to keep your name in or not?
No, it wasn't.
Wasn't?
That was
okay,
the
well, then
interesting
why did Borzello at ESPN.com update his all-too-early top 25 for 2019 and 20 this morning?
I don't know why he exactly did it this morning, but that was the interesting thing about it, is that he has till the end of the month to do it, but he officially announced it yesterday. Some people thought, okay, well, there is this seven-footer who's looking for a scholarship for 2019 right now. Apparently, he's taking a visit to Arizona State, so...
This is Chloriel Mariel or whatever.
The
7'3 guy who's had some injuries, and apparently Maryland's in the running for him.
Yes.
But by the way, on ESPN.com's top 25 college basketball 2019-2020 all too early rankings, Maryland is ninth after the Bruno Fernando news. But did you see how many Big Ten teams are in the top 10? Michigan State's one. Then Duke, Kentucky, Villanova, then Michigan's five, Gonzaga's six, Ohio State is seven, then Louisville, and then Maryland, and then Kansas. So Maryland, on CBS Sports recently, assuming Bruno was leaving, they had Maryland at five.
Yep, Gary Parrish had them at five.
ESPN's got them at nine. You know, I said that if they lose Bruno but Sticks comes back, they're no worse than a top 15 team next year. Looks like a lot of people have them a lot higher than just, you know, in the 15 range. We shall see. Long time between now and the opening of college basketball season. One other thing, too, and I just read this as we were going through the show, and I would have mentioned it to Scott, but I didn't see it until moments ago. Sarunas Jasikevičius, played at Maryland in the 90s and then had one of the great EuroLeague careers of all time, is being considered as a Memphis Grizzlies head coaching candidate. And he is, I'm assuming he's been coaching in the EuroLeague.
Yeah, his name has come up for college coaching.
Has it really?
Not great, like kind of a dark horse thing. Hey, this guy's killing it out in Europe. He might be someone to at least take a look at, but never seriously. But yeah, apparently he's been absolutely killing it in Europe.
Interesting. He was a good college basketball player. High IQ, could really shoot it. What he became, though, as a professional, as he grew physically and matured and the whole thing, is he became a great offensive all-around player. And if I recall, he did get a shot in the NBA, right? Didn't he get a brief shot with I want to say it was the Spurs? It may have been somebody else.
Yeah, he was with the Pacers for a few years.
Oh, it was the Pacers.
Yes.
Yeah. But did not have a lot of success in the NBA, I don't think. It was late in his career, too, for the most part, I think.
Yeah, he had been playing professionally for 7 years before getting with the Pacers.
Okay. He was a good college player. I would imagine that he'd be a good coach. All right, that's it. We're done. Thanks to Aaron. Thanks to Scott. Thanks to my buddy Howie. And for all of you that actually had stock in Beyond Meat today, congratulations. Tomorrow, Mike Shanahan will join us. He followed the draft closely, not just the Redskins draft, but the entire league's draft. We'll get some thoughts from him on all of the quarterbacks and all of the teams' drafts, including the Redskins, of course. And he'll join us tomorrow. Enjoy the day. Bye.